This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, June 6th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. Today's edition of Ozarks begins in rural Benton County near Siloam Springs. Saturday afternoon, the barbecue grills were at full capacity at the Walker home, burgers and hot dogs being prepared for dozens of visitors to Dale Lee Walker's home. But Dale had only been here a few minutes when the food began to be served. Many of the others had been here for much of the past 80 days, including Jan Skopasek, the executive director of Rebuilding Together of Northwest Arkansas.
This Saturday is the culmination of a very, very special project that we groundbroke on March 16th to provide a new home through our Sears Heroes at Home program for veteran Dale Lee Walker Jr., his wife Regina, and their daughter Jay Lee.
The Walker home had to be rebuilt because on New Year's Eve morning, it was demolished by an F3 tornado. Regina Walker had already left for work, but Lee and his 13-year-old daughter were home when the storm raged through the woods by their old house. Dale rushed to reach his sleeping daughter, but the house exploded and sucked both of them up and tossed them to a field across the street, more than 450 feet away. Jay Lee had a concussion, a broken finger, and some deep cuts. Dale had a broken back and two broken legs. The house was completely wiped from its foundation. Again, Jan Skopasek with Rebuilding Together of Northwest Arkansas.
When we take a look at Lee's service to this country of 22 years, he served in Kosovo, he served in Iraq. He was blessed to come home healthy. And on New Year's Eve morning, that all changed.
Rebuilding Together is an organization that rehabilitates, revitalizes, and in this extreme case, totally rebuilds homes for people in need in Northwest Arkansas. Jan says more than 700 volunteers contributed more than 7,000 hours of work to go from the studs to roof in under 3 months. Dale, Regina, and Jay Lee Walker lost everything in the tornado. As this new home neared completion, the Walkers were kept away from the site and saw their new home for just the first time Saturday. Sitting with friends, neighbors, and strangers on Saturday, Dale could only say it had been an overwhelming morning.
I actually teared up coming down the road. Luckily, we were going slow enough that it dried up before I actually got in the driveway. But it started again when I got in here.
May I have your attention, please? We're ready to get started.
After the meal, volunteers and others moved under tents near the just-finished house for an official presentation of the home to the Walkers. The Arkansas National Guard presented colors and raised an American flag on the family's new front yard flagpole. Prayers were offered and stories told about the 10-week effort to completely rebuild the house. The tornado didn't just rip the old house from its foundation, but it deposited the family's belongings across a wide swath of land, many of those items lost forever. Dale's medals and commendations from his service in the National Guard were included in those lost items. Saturday, replacement medals were presented.
During Staff Sergeant Walker's 22-plus years of honorable service with the Arkansas Army National Guard, he received the following awards and decorations. The Meritorious Service Medal, Army Commendation Medal with one Oak Leaf Cluster, Army Good Conduct Medal.
During his 22 years in the Guard, Dale served in Desert Storm, Kosovo, and Kuwait. He also served as Border Patrol in Arizona and helped with the cleanup of North Arkansas after the 2009 ice storm. His veteran status helped attract a partner to this project, the Heroes at Home program, sponsored by the retailer Sears to help renovate homes of veterans. The Walker home was the first in the country to receive the studs to roof treatment. Gary Officer, the president and CEO of Rebuilding Together's national office, was at Saturday's dedication.
My office gave Northwest Arkansas fairly at $75,000. They even went out there and spoke to electricians, to roofers, to builders, to siders, to kitchen folks, and did all the work with that budget. But also they got more than that. They got relationships that they can extend over time to help others in need in this community.
During his 22 years in the Guard, Dale served in Desert Storm, Kosovo, and Kuwait. He also served as Border Patrol in Arizona and helped with the cleanup of North Arkansas after the 2009 ice storm. His veteran status helped attract a partner to this project, the Heroes at Home program, sponsored by the retailer Sears to help renovate homes of veterans. The Walker home was the first in the country to receive the studs to roof treatment. Gary Officer, the president and CEO of Rebuilding Together's national office, was at Saturday's dedication.
One of the great value of our democracy is that we have a phenomena called volunteerism. And I've lived in several countries in Europe, and there's no country I've experienced that is able to mobilize so many good people who are willing to give their time, their effort, their resources to a cause. And this project to me exemplifies that spirit of volunteerism that is so essential to our democracy. And this community, to me, exemplifies that.
And all the paperwork is in, and I'm here today to, on behalf of Benton County and the Benton County Planning and Inspection, Building Inspection Department, to present the certificate of occupancy to the Walker family, Regina and daughter Kaylee, the certificate of occupancy for your new building, your new home.
Saturday, with temperatures in the low 90s and not even a shadow of a cloud overhead, the Walker family began living in their new home just 5 months after the previous one had been carried away. Dale Walker, still using crutches and scheduled for another surgery, was quietly amazed at what had happened since December 31st.
God has blessed us since New Year's Eve. I mean, my first blessing was to know that my stepdaughter got up and she basically walked out of it. She had a concussion. She had a fractured fingertip and a lot of road rash, but she basically walked away. And that was my first blessing. We've been blessed ever since.
Dale Lee Walker speaking Saturday at the dedication of his new home built by volunteers, Rebuilding Together of Northwest Arkansas, and Heroes at Home. This is Ozarks at Large. At the end of the previous story, we heard the Walker family receive the official certification for occupancy to their new home. Later this year, a different sort of paper will be required in Fayetteville to operate a business. The city's business licensing process begins in earnest in a few months, but city officials have been encouraging business owners to prepare as soon as possible to register their businesses with the city to obtain that license. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Agnihotri-Madolker recently spoke with current planner for the city, Jesse Fulcher, for details on the registration process and its benefits.
So, Jesse, tell us something about how can a business in Fayetteville register with the city?
Well, they can start registering later this year. The actual program is implemented on September 1st. We're going to have everything up and running in our system to allow us to accept applications before that, because currently there is a certificate of zoning compliance license that are required for all businesses, and so we don't want to double someone up. And so we'll start accepting business licenses prior to September 1st. But the actual registration time frame is between September 1st and October 31st, and that would be every year. This year will be the first year that it's implemented, so everyone will register for the first time, and then beginning next year, you'll start renewing. So each business will renew if it already has one, or as businesses open, they will register for the first time.
Okay. So how much time or how much paperwork goes into registering your business with the city of Fayetteville?
Right now, it's just a one-page application. It's pretty basic information. It's asking you for, you know, the organization or business name, you know, the location, address and phone number, web address, you know, the business owner contact information for our police department, who currently is calling every business in the city to get emergency contacts. So when they have a burglar alarm or a fire alarm go off, after hours, they have someone that they can contact to let them into a building. We have emergency contact information that we'll be asking for to help out with our dispatch department. And then the rest of the questions are fairly straightforward as far as the number of parking spaces that you have. Do you have a fire alarm system, sprinkler system? Do you store explosive materials? So it's pretty basic information, and it's all contained on one page.
So are the applications approved as soon as you get them, or does it take time to process them?
Yeah, after we receive each application, we'll process that in-house, and then once that's approved, we'll actually mail out a license to be displayed on the premises of the business, similar to a liquor license or a health department, you know, license that would be issued by another agency. You would simply display this on the premises for the public to be notified that you have registered. And we would mail that out after it'd be approved, and then every year as those are renewed, we would send out either a new license or some type of renewal sticker or some type of stamp to put on that existing license.
All right. How big does a small business have to be to register with the city? There are so many people who are starting their own businesses, ventures, maybe websites, blogs that they might profit off of. So is there a guideline?
Yeah, that's a large web to try to catch, and one of the bigger discussion points is how you cover all the various types of businesses, especially those that are operated out of the home now and on the internet. What we do exempt is minors. So if you're a babysitter and maybe do that as you're in junior high or high school, you're exempt. Religious entities, churches, and those types of institutions are exempted unless they operate a daycare. Several churches in the area have daycares or Mother Day Out programs, and those businesses of the church are not exempt, but the church operation itself would be. Property owners or people that own rental property, and actually there's a break depending on the number of units. So if you own three or less dwelling units and you're just an individual, then you would not have to register. But if you own more than three, or if you would, I mean, you know, any business, institution, corporation, LLC, LLP, partnership, nonprofit association, corporation, sole proprietorship, or other non-governmental entity with a physical address or which operates a legally permitted home occupation within the Fayetteville city limits shall be required to file for the City of Fayetteville Business Registry and License. Based on that broad description, an internet-based business that is not considered a home occupation, that does not receive traffic, is not registered as an LLC or LLP, it's just John Doe, I sell on eBay, would not be required to register.
What are the details of how much do people have to pay? Where can they go to register? What are the deadlines?
Like I said, the registration time period every year is between September 1st and October 31st. And that's a fixed fee period. And so if you submit, so this year we would expect everyone to provide their business licenses prior to September 1st and up to October 31st, and we'll process them as they come in. And that fee will be $35 or $32 if you process that online. And, of course, you'll be able to go onto the city's website and go to a link that takes you to the business license application. You simply do a fill-in form, and that submits directly to us. We finish the processing part, and you do get a reduced fee on that. If you miss that deadline, you would fall into a late fee registration, and usually that's about an additional $3 for, you know, 1 month late, another $3 after that, and then I think it hikes maybe $11 if you're 3 months late. And that's the same for renewals. Every year you would renew your permit between September 1st and October 31st, and if you miss that period, that deadline, then you would be charged a late fee depending on when that was submitted. And then, of course, we have partial rates. You know, a new business may open up. And so if you opened up between March 1st and October 31st, you know, a mid-year registration, you'd get a reduced fee. I think it's $17 for a paper application and $15 for an online application. Home occupations are a reduced fee also. They pay $22 for the paper and $20 for the online. And then, you know, we also have sidewalk vendors in the city, which are actually under a separate ordinance and have their own registration fees.
I know we've talked about a few, but what are the benefits of registering your business with the city?
Well, two of the main ones is really you can, you know, data, tracking data, the business types. The Chamber of Commerce was very interested in being able to obtain this information. Currently, we have no idea the number of businesses that we have in the city of Fayetteville. Obviously, we have some that come in and register. Not all of them do register. And so that's a large gap in the data, an important economic development data that you would want to have in your city, but we don't have right now. So we're hoping that we'll be able to provide that to the Chamber of Commerce from an economic development viewpoint. But also on the emergency response side, like I said earlier, the dispatch department for the police department actually calls each business every year to get emergency contact information. So if they respond to an alarm after hours, they want to contact that manager or business owner and hopefully get them down to the site and open up the doors for them so they don't have to, you know, break through a window or enter a building with, you know, not knowing maybe the type of materials inside. And so it's a real benefit to them to have that emergency contact information for after-hours responses. And then also for our fire department, there's a lack of information on the number of buildings that have fire suppression systems or sprinkler systems that have fire alarms, you know, restaurants that do retrofits and include items that may, you know, increase the possibility of a fire, properties that store explosive materials. So there's just a lack of data from an economic side and from a public safety side, and we hope that this program will be a benefit to both.
Jesse Fulcher is current planner for the City of Fayetteville. For more information about registering a Fayetteville business, online, accessfayetteville.org, or by phone, 575-8308. This is Ozarks at Large. Because of strategic relations between the Republic of the Marshall Islands and the United States government, Marshallese are free to travel to America with only a passport to live, work, and educate their children for as long as they wish. There is a significant Marshallese population, of course, in Northwest Arkansas, especially Springdale. But now, a coalition of U.S. legislators is asking the U.S. State Department to screen Marshall Islanders before they enter this country. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
30 years ago, a Marshallese man found a job at a poultry slaughterhouse in the Arkansas Ozarks. Word spread, and soon he was followed by hundreds of others. The Republic of the Marshall Islands is a vast archipelago with sandy white beaches surrounded by turquoise seas. But unemployment hovers near 40%, medical facilities are scant, and education limited. While many islanders have moved to Hawaii and along the western United States, most are settling in Arkansas, where between 6 and 10,000 now live. Under a special treaty, they can lawfully travel to the United States and establish residence as non-immigrants, apply for work, enroll their children in public school, and for many, secure medical care. But now certain lawmakers say Arkansas, under that compact, should not be a destination for sick Marshallese. U.S. Senator John Bozeman.
I think the purpose was to try and screen them on the islands and then identify and help with their care at that point.
The Marshallese have the highest incidence of tuberculosis, a lung disease, among Pacific Island nations. And due to processed Western diets, many suffer with severe diabetes and heart disease. Hansen's disease is also endemic in the population, and because of a decade of nuclear weapons tests on the Marshalls in the mid-20th century, thyroid and other cancers are more prevalent among elders. The first ever survey of Ozark Islanders, funded by the CDC through the Arkansas Department of Health, was conducted in 2009 in cooperation with Gaps in Service to Marshall Islanders Task Force, based at the Jones Center in Springdale. The purpose was to assess health behaviors, attitudes, and beliefs, and access to health care. A majority of islanders reported good to excellent health. 40% said they had routine health checkups within the past year. One-third had annual dental checkups. 33% said they were employed, yet 61% reported they were covered under health insurance. 68% reported no chronic health issues, yet nearly 40% were measured as obese. Local Marshallese officials claim the study is flawed due to language barriers, as well as traditional penchant to not discuss personal issues. In the meantime, the nonprofit community clinic in Springdale provides the girth of medical care to low-income and underinsured islanders. Of course, many do work and are insured. Others routinely resort to hospital emergency rooms. State Health Department also pitches in, helping to manage TB cases, provide immunizations, chronic disease intervention, and community outreach. Former U.S. Senator Blanche Lincoln last year appropriated more than $250,000 for the agency, but it's far short of what's needed. So on May 12th, U.S. Republican Senator John Bozeman and U.S. Democratic Senator Mark Pryor, along with seven other congressional leaders, signed a letter to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Secretary of Interior Kenneth Salazar, asking them to enact a screening policy, saying the current arrangement is unsustainable.
Well, what we've tried to do is ask the State Department to take a look and visit with the authorities in the Marshall Islands, really to put ourselves in a better situation of trying to provide facilities where that the Marshallese can get a little bit better health care. We want the compact, and the compact is set in stone. We want it to be such that, you know, they're coming to the United States for educational opportunities, for work opportunities. So that's how it was set up. Not so much to seek medical care that can't be provided for, you know, there on the islands.
Senator John Bozeman, a longtime advocate for Arkansas Islanders, has traveled to the Republic of the Marshall Islands when he was serving as congressman. He understands firsthand why they're moving here. But now it's time, he says, for the Marshallese government to step up.
Big things like dialysis, you know, having it made available there on the island rather than a person who has that problem to feel like they have to come to the United States to get that kind of care.
Under the current treaty, special funding is delivered to destination states to offset social service costs. For example, the state of Hawaii receives $13 million a year for their Pacific Islanders. Arkansas, which has the largest population of migrant Marshallese in the world, gets nothing. For years, State Department officials blamed a lack of enumeration. But now the 2010 census indicates that more than 5,500 people self-identified as Pacific Islanders living in Arkansas. And that's just those willing to be surveyed. Senator Bozeman did not say as much, but this call to screen islanders may, in the end, pressure the State Department and the Republic of the Marshall Islands government to provide a piece of compact pie to Arkansas. If not, the Republic of the Marshall Islands may be forced to spend many more of its own dollars on medical infrastructure.
It makes sense to try and mitigate the issues, the problems that they're having, you know, where they have friends and family to help them, you know, with whatever the problem is. So the compact is in force. We're just saying, look, you know, do we need to do anything different? Not in changing the compact, but just using the compact dollars that are there to make it more beneficial for the Marshallese and then the host areas where they're residing.
Now, the May 12th letter to Clinton and Salazar occurred just days after a controversial land use agreement was reached, allowing for continued strategic U.S. military weaps testing operations on Kwajalein Atoll in the Republic of the Marshall Islands. At issue were a group of Kwajalein landholders demanding increased annual rent from $15 million annually to $19 million. They held out for 8 years, but finally agreed mid-May to accepting a $32 million payout, money held in escrow, extending U.S. use of Kwajalein to 2066.
I can just speak for myself, but I didn't realize that that those negotiations were reaching conclusion as we talked about it and, you know, started drafting it and things like that. So,
therefore not influencing at least this senator's decision to press for health screenings and beefed up medical care in the Republic of the Marshall Islands. Arkansas Marshallese General Counsel Carmen Chongom reportedly said she was unaware of the letter. And Foreign Minister John Silk, who did not receive a copy, has gone on record saying such a requirement violates the spirit of the treaty. And while some see this as a means to restrict islander migration into Arkansas, U.S. Senator John Bozeman says Marshallese will continue to be welcome here and provided for.
One thing that we can be very, very proud of is the the way that Arkansas, the way that the people of Northwest Arkansas, but Arkansas in general, through the health department and through just a variety of different agencies has reached out, our educational facilities, reached out and really made every effort to be good neighbors. And, you know, we're very proud of the Marshallese that are there and, you know, trying to help them in their quest for work, you know, and furthering their education. And so all of that's been really a good story that we can tell, that we can all be very, very proud of.
Congressional leaders have asked both Secretaries Clinton and Salazar at their annual budget meeting with the RMI government this summer to formulate an agreement to establish medical screening protocol. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. It is Monday, June 6th, 2011. Earlier this spring on Ozarks, Ithi Agnihotri-Madolkar reported on research at the University of Arkansas surrounding the age of rocks and minerals. She talked to Dr. Fongxin Tong about his work using a new approach to solve mysteries about the cooling of very old geological properties. That work has earned him a career award from the National Science Foundation of more than $450,000. The university issued a press release this morning about the award. This is how Dr. Tong described some of his research in Ithi's report this spring.
When you go to a bakery, so you will see all kinds of breads and cakes. They look so different, and I'm pretty sure they taste so different. So why is that? Two reasons are very important. At which temperature the cake was baked, and how long the cake was baked at that temperature. For example, if you put the ingredients in the oven for at 50 degrees, and we know it's not going to work regardless of how long you bake it. And the same is true if you bake it at very high temperature, but you only bake it like for 1 minute, it's not going to work either.
Instead of cakes in the oven, Dr. Tong's research uses isotopes to determine how different rocks and minerals cooled millions of years ago. The NSF award will allow him to support one doctoral student for 5 years, one master's student for 2 years, and allow him to focus on the research more and be concerned less with raising money for the research for the 5-year period of the award. He's been part of the faculty at the University of Arkansas since 2008. The United States Marshals Museum project in Fort Smith is somewhat closer to its $50 million fundraising goal after an anonymous gift of $1 million was announced late last week. Jim Dunn, the executive director of the U.S. Marshals Museum, says the gift is significant for many reasons.
We have still a long way to go, but this indicates to others that we are serious, that we are making progress, and that the project is going to happen. And so people like to be a part of a successful project, and this indicates that that's what's happening now. So it is good at several different levels for us. So, you know, as I have said before, we're on cloud nine, and we hope to get more of these in the coming weeks and months.
Focus campaigns to raise money regionally and nationally are planned. In addition, there have been recent donations of important items for eventual display at the museum made in the past few months. Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, a conversation with Jim Dunn about the progress at the museum. The season is over for the Arkansas Razorback baseball team. Arkansas lost to Arizona State last night 13-4 in Tempe to end the season at the NCAA Tournament Regional. The Razorbacks had made it to last night's game with a win over Charlotte earlier yesterday. Arkansas ends the season with a record of 40-22. Arizona State will play the winner of this afternoon's game between Texas and Kent State in next weekend's Super Regional Round. This is Ozarks at Large for the 6th of June, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me on the phone again today is Becca Bacon-Martin. She's the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. But Becca, alas, you are no longer in New Orleans, are you?
Alas, I'm not. I'm back at my desk. But that's all right, because everybody has to recover from too much fun. And if you're trying to recover from too much Wakarusa fun, there's a party tonight at George's.
Well, why stop, right?
Why stop? Mountain Standard Time is playing, the Jane Ash Band, Spiritual Res, the show's free. So, you know, if you've had a shower but you're still not ready to go home, check that out. Scott Miller is at Herman's Rib House in Fayetteville tonight.
Ah.
Chris Henderson is at JJ's Grill and Chill. In Fayetteville. Derek Townsend at JJ's in Rogers, and Darren Ray's at Pesto Cafe in Fayetteville, so there's plenty of music still going on.
So if you're at Wakarusa, you don't have to quit cold turkey, and if you missed it, you can ease yourself back into live music.
Exactly. And if you're planning ahead for the summer, and instead of listening us to talk about the arts, you want to try it, auditions for children are tonight for The Sound of Music at Rogers Little Theater.
Oh,
auditions start at 7. Ed McClure is the director, if you want to get in touch with him. And auditions for adults are tomorrow night at 7.
And that takes place at Rogers Little Theater?
Yes, it does.
All right. Your colleague and my friend, Kevin Kinder, was at Wakarusa for most of it. Have you seen him at the office yet today?
I have, and you know, he looks surprisingly good.
Well, good. I'm happy to hear that.
He remembered the sunscreen, and he smells okay.
Well, very good. Becca, I'm glad you're home safely, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Yes, you will. Thanks, Kyle.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This week on This American Life, Mike Birbiglia on his first kiss.
Because it was in seventh grade when people started making out with each other. And I remember this very well, because I was like, people we know are making out with other people we know?
First contact, that means kissing, that means space aliens, that means meeting foreigners. This week.
This American Life, twice this weekend, Saturday morning at 6, Sunday morning at 10, on KUAF 91.3 FM. You may recall last month, Christina Thomas, our energy correspondent for Ozarks at Large, had a preview of an event called Armed to Farm. It's about moving veterans from their military service to a possible career in agriculture. The event took place in late May, and now Christina has this follow-up.
After 40 years of farming, I decided to go work with kids who were young people who were beginning farmers, and a few months into it, the ones that were most compelling and most exciting to me were several young men who had served in Iraq. And so I just went along on that thrust and realized that we could put two things together: our nation's critical need for young people and talented people going into agriculture, and creating jobs and really viable, exciting opportunity and future for the young men and women coming home.
That's Michael O'Gorman. He's the founder of the Farmer Vet Coalition, a sponsoring organization of the Armed to Farm Weekend Workshop, which included farm tours and presentations on soil and marketing. The Northwest Arkansas event was just one of many across the United States. Others occur in places such as Iowa, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. Michael says that these weekends not only give veterans valuable lessons in different types of farming, but also bridge a relationship between two unique groups of people.
And it's a great way for veterans to not only get out on the farm and learn things really hands-on, but to meet each other, because we have this thin little sliver of our population now that serve in the military. We have another thin little sliver that farm. They're spread all over the country, and so when they belong to the intersection of those two, you know, it's a pretty unique and exciting club. The people that have been willing to do the two hardest things in our society, and one for many of them very short lifetime, and it's real exciting for them to meet each other and get a sense of that this is going to be a real exciting movement.
The farm visits began early on a Saturday morning with Maple Gorge Farm, a family-run sheep and goat farm. Owner and farmer Linda Coffey started off the day with a description of what the vets would see and do.
The family is really important to Maple Gorge Farm, and I think you'll see that as we do the tour. Couldn't do it without them, and they're a lot of the reason we do it. So, do we know how many here are interested in sheep?
Sheep.
Four, okay. And goats? Okay. Good. And everybody gets to learn to milk a goat today, because that's something you can go home and brag about, right? Yeah. And Hannah's a very experienced teacher. We teach probably 100 kids every year at the county fair. They'll come by while she's milking and she teaches them. We've never had one that we couldn't teach, have we, Hannah? No. So you're all going to learn that.
The pressure's on.
Yeah. Yeah.
In addition to goat milking, the vets received a tour of the farm, starting with the basics, as well as in-depth tutorials on sheep and goats' grazing habits, types of fencing to use, and how to protect against predators. Matt Lauren, a veteran from Michigan, himself a sheep and goat farmer, proved to be very knowledgeable in these areas. Matt says that he had worked on farms growing up, but had never owned his own. After serving in the Army for 11 years, he and his wife Danielle started farming on a small scale, but have since expanded.
I'd say about 2009 is when we started off with chickens, and then we got a couple goats. We ended up getting a couple llamas for protection, and now we have a steer for raising for our own meat, and a couple of pigs for the same reason, and turkeys.
He says that the things he learned and the people he met were very beneficial, and hopes to use them in his own operations. Not all of the veterans have up and running farms. Some, like Bob Morrow of Huntsville, are just starting out. After 20 years and 3 wars with the Air Force, Bob says that he is going back to his roots as he grew up farming. His farming interests lie in wanting to support and teach his large family.
The small farming is particularly interesting to me because we want to support my family, which is, we have a large family. I have 7 children at home.
Wow.
And so raising them on the farm, like I was raised, will give them a sense of accomplishment like I had, and learn how to work and that sort of thing. But at the same time, we know what we're eating. You know, whereas when you go buy something at the supermarket, you don't necessarily know what you're eating. Mm-hmm. So that's really our end goal, is to support our family.
Terrell Spence Spencer, a poultry specialist with the National Center for Appropriate Technology, another sponsoring organization of the weekend, is also a farmer and veteran. He spoke at length about what inspired him to start farming after serving in the Iraq War.
2004, I was sitting on top of a Humvee going about 65 miles an hour down MSR, main supply route, Tampa. And I was a machine gunner in a somewhat armored Humvee or gun truck. And we were rolling down from Baghdad to Kuwait. In southern Iraq, everything was flat. And I know it looked like fields, and you know, you'd look to your left and your right, and in between the minefields, and you know, I mean, just all the detritus of war, I guess. You'd be rolling down, and it seemed like you should be looking at fields. There were ditches, there were irrigation pumps, and that just kind of puzzled me. And then, you know, we did that for around a year, just periodically running routes. I was in the 392nd Chemical Recon Company out of Russellville in Little Rock, and while we were over there, primarily what we did was convoy escorts, combat patrols, and that. And so from my Humvee, I had the best view in the house, and you know, because the top half of me was sticking out, and so my job was to watch, and I watched. And what I noticed was that through the months, you know, he came back one time, and all those flat fields that were just dust and desert were flooded, and coming back, you know, during the late summer months, one day I saw lots of families loading up vehicles full of salt. They were farming salt.
When Spence got back, he enrolled in college. What he learned in an intro to soils class allowed him to make a connection to what he had seen in Iraq. He learned that the farming and irrigation methods that had been used in that area were causing the fields to turn to salt. It was in learning that humans were trashing the lands that feed them, in Iraq, on a battlefield, that the reality of sustainable agriculture hit him. It was also through watching the Iraqi farmers that Spence was able to find some peace during his time at war, as well as when he returned home and began dealing with his experiences.
And just, I was close to a vineyard, and there were Iraqi families working the vineyards, and there were watermelon vines. And I just remember being out, like, your heart always got racing. There were some parts, and in that particular trip, there'd been some things that had kind of freaked me out that I'd saw, and people that just weren't going to be going home, and that were pretty disturbing. And just the contrast of that, and just being out there, and there was a breeze, and watching these farmers just work their fields, that struck me as peaceful, and when I got back through all, working through the things that I'd done, that had been done to me, and that I'd been a part of, the call of working the land, it seems like there's something innate and powerful inside of that. Like, it just seems like that's almost a technology for bringing peace to warriors, to soldiers, and sure enough, my heart was drawn to that, and sure enough, I found peace through that with a lot of things, and that. So that's kind of how you wouldn't think, up in a holler, farming a holler in the Boston Mountains in West Fork, Arkansas, that would get started in southern Iraq, but that's how it did.
In reflecting on the weekend, Spence says that it was both inspirational and productive. Over 20 veterans from a variety of locations such as Samoa, Florida, and Arkansas participated in the event. He says that the vets were incredibly interested in learning as much as they could, that each of the events ran over in time because much was said and many questions were asked. The workshop proved to build a network of veteran farmers, as well as cultivated business.
So the workshop went really well. We were very, very pleased with what had happened, and so one of the benefits was we built a local connection, a network of farmers that had kind of been coalescing anyways, but, and instead of everybody just knowing me, they got to make the connections and that as well. And it showed to us that there really is a huge demand for this. And just the fact in the past week, the calls that we've gotten, it just really says, man, this is a business incubator. What we're doing, like, it's important not only for the vets and that, but it's really important for the rural communities, possibly tapping into these veterans, because, you're having farms start up now or hobbies being turned into businesses by folks, that live in some really economically depressed areas. So, yeah, it was a fantastic weekend.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
Christina Thomas is energy correspondent for Ozarks at Large, and support for her work on this program is provided in part by Energy Corps. This is Ozarks at Large. Harrison Keeler and Writer's Almanac ahead. First, though, time for a question. Today's correct answer winner will receive two movie passes to any Area Malco movie theater, as well as vouchers to exchange for two tickets to any upcoming home game for the Northwest Arkansas Naturals at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. Naturals won their game last night at Arvest 8-3 over Midland and will face the Rockhounds again tonight at 7 at Arvest Ballpark. And today's trivia question involves the city of Midland, Texas. It's halfway between the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area and El Paso, and it is the home of some famous people. The first President Bush grew up there. The second President Bush also lived there for a time. City with a population of 112,000 can claim Oscar winner Tommy Lee Jones as a hometown native and a member of the cast of Cheers. Which actor that was on Cheers for several years was born in Midland, Texas? Was it Ted Danson, Shelley Long, or Woody Harrelson? If you have an answer or just have a guess, you can call in 800-522-5823. 800-522-5823. All correct answers are put in the ceramic cow, and we'll draw one winner for the tickets to an upcoming Northwest Arkansas Naturals baseball game and movie passes to any area Malco movie theater. Good luck. Time to answer today's question. It was in honor of Midland, Texas. The Midland Rockhounds are facing the Northwest Arkansas Naturals tonight in Springdale at 7. So the question was, what member of the cast of Cheers does the town of Midland claim as a native son? I said, was it Shelley Long, Ted Danson, or Woody Harrelson? The answer is Woody Harrelson, who played the bartender Woody for the last several years on Cheers. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals and the Midland Rockhounds play tonight at Arvest Ballpark beginning at 7. We'll pick our winner for tickets for any upcoming Northwest Arkansas Naturals game and the movie passes in just a moment. And support for Ozarks at Large on KUAF comes from the KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival, presenting the music of Mozart, Mueller, and Brahms, performed by the University of Arkansas Music Department faculty and guest artists Thursday night beginning at 7:30 at St. Paul's Episcopal Church Parish Hall. Admission is free. Information available at fulbrightsummermusic.uark.edu. Support for Ozarks at Large is also provided by Walton Art Center's 11th Annual Art of Wine Festival, with tastings and events June 10th and 11th. Proceeds from the Art of Wine Festival support Walton Art Center's arts, learning, and education programs. Tickets and information are available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers Decatur, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 26 years. You can listen online at KUAF.com. A couple of other music notes to consider this week. The Mount Sequoia and Music on the Mountain continues its first Tuesday series of concerts tomorrow night. The artist will be Justin Brasher. The show is free and it's open to the public. For more information, you can call 444-4531. And the Pride of the Ozarks Barbershop Chorus will join with the choir from Benton County School of the Arts High School and a number of other a cappella singers to present an evening of musical entertainment to benefit the victims of the recent Joplin tornado. Performance is Friday night at 7 at the high school auditorium at 506 West Poplar Street in Rogers. Admission is free, but donations will be taken up. All proceeds will go to the Joplin relief effort. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you'd like more information about the music you hear during editions of Ozarks at Large, you can find that at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. Tomorrow at noon, another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Stay cool and have a great Monday. Thanks for listening.